A Tempest of Tea by Hafsa Faisal, narrated for you by Maya Soroya. Act 1. Vengeance Never Dies. 1. Arthi. The streets of White Roaring grew fangs at night. When the moon dragged a claw and the shop fronts cut dim, and those who craved blood walked bold, Arthi Casimir couldn't be bothered. By the cold, by the dark, by the vampires. Business never stopped. It was long past midnight, and the foundries were silent. The sparks that lit the evening now simmered in coals left to cool, and dirty aprons had been cast aside as workmen hobbled into hovels. Coffee houses, butchers, and betting shops slumbered in preparation for dawn, the capital kept alive by sin and a tea room nestled at the crossroads of slum and wealth. Spindrift, it was called. Arthi's pride and joy, with its gleaming wood floors and the aroma of fresh tea as it filled a sparkling pot, in turn filling the coffers of her crew. The snobbery of her patrons was amended by the secrets they spilled in front of a staff of orphans, who most certainly wouldn't understand the refined tongue of the rich. She'd much rather be there than here, in the late autumn chill.
I could go alone, Jin said, slowing his pace to match hers. His hair fell straight and sharp as a knife, his umbrella as elegant and clean-cut as he was. All lean limbs and broad shoulders, sauntering down the gaslight-peppered streets.
So I can come looking at dawn to find you nattering away with him?
Arthi didn't make a habit of visiting patrons who were racking up tabs, but this one had turned away too many of her crew.
With the Matteo Andoni?
He asked, as if the idea were preposterous.
Really, Arthi?
Jin was the sort of charming even a king would draw a chair for if he flashed the right smile, and he knew it, so she didn't bother with an answer. They crossed down to the quieter arms place, where dirt was nowhere to be seen, and the houses were posh and brick-faced. A carriage trundled past the uniformed men standing guard at the top of the street, horses snorting under the coachman's direction. Atenia's capital of White Roaring rarely slept, and with the recent vampire disappearances, whispers kept the city ever more awake. Not because the people cared for the welfare of vampires, but because if something nefarious could happen to them, how would weaker human folk fare? As alarming as the disappearances were, Arthi disliked the increase in the ram's horned guard even more. They were everywhere, keeping watch. It was unfair for the masked ram to see so much when the people of Atenia couldn't even see the face of the monarch that ruled them. Arthi tucked a fold of paper into her vest and stopped before an imposing black fence.
Here we are, 337 Arms Place.
Jin whistled at the mansion set behind a trim lawn.
Now that's what we call money.
The estate demanded attention, from the frills along the windows to the fervent red of the front door. Fitting. Men lauded Matteo Andoni's name on the streets. Women whispered it into their sheets, though very rarely with him in them.
No, that's what we call too much. Look sharp.
She didn't care if Matteo Andoni was the country's beloved paint slinger.
If you couldn't pay, you shouldn't drink.
They stepped through the gate and made their way up the wide steps. Arthi rapped with the iron knocker, and Jin leaned back against the porch wall, his grip loose around the black umbrella. The door opened to a thin man with a thinning scalp. Whatever hair that might have once been on his head had now relocated to the thick moustache curling above his lip.
Yes?
Arthi tucked her hands into her trouser pockets, the pistol in her holster glinting in the light.
She'd rather not shoot the thing, but it was the only one of its kind, and she's sure as blood wouldn't keep it hidden away.
Paying a visit.
Don't mind the hour, Jin added with a grin.
The butler looked from Arthi's mauve hair and brown Solani skin to Jin's monolid eyes and back to Arthi, glancing from the short crop of her hair to the lapels of her open jacket, then to the shine of the chain
that led to the watch in her vest.
Look all you want, bugger.
He'd find no slum in them. Her crew might have hailed from the worst of White Roaring, but what Arthi lacked in status, she made up for in dignity, thank you very much.
Weapons? The butler asked, palm outstretched.
No, thank you, Arthi smiled. I have my own.
What we'd really like is a kettle on the stove, Jin said. It's quite the chill you're letting us linger in.
The butler looked chagrined. Jin wrapped his umbrella on the ground and invited himself inside, his frame engulfing the narrow hall.
Much obliged, good sir.
Come along, Arthi. She tipped her hat and followed Jin into a receiving room with brocaded walls and shadowy shelves. Most of the lamps banked low, so the coffee table gleamed the same crimson as the rug.
You...
The butler worked himself into a fit behind them.
You cannot...
It's quite all right, Ivor, someone said in a smooth voice. A match hissed, and a bob of light illuminated a man lounging on a settee, with one arm slung across its back, sleeves rolled to his forearms. His shirt was untucked and open at the collar, the loose strings framing a V of cream down to his navel. The ruffles looked like petals kissing his skin. It was far more flesh than Arthi was accustomed to seeing from members of high society. Jin coughed, throwing out a word in the midst of it.
Ogling!
She was not.
Matteo Andoni, said Arthi, ignoring Jin.
He had the fine aristocratic features unique to the neighbouring country of Valence, making him as much an immigrant as she and Jin, but without the struggle.
Arthi Casimir.
He matched her slow drawl. Onyx and brass rings glittered from his fingers. His hair was dark and long, a carefully arranged mess.
Ivor and I have been making bets. He believed you'd show 20 duven ago. How many of the Casimir crew had dropped by my doorstep at that point, Ivor?
3?
6, sire.
Matteo waved a hand.
Never been fond of numbers, me.
If his prowess in the arts wasn't evident from the faint smudge of colour on his fingers and every fool crowing it on the streets, it was overwhelmingly so from the way he observed. There was a greed in his gaze, as if he feared missing the world by giving in to a blink.
Needless to say, Ivor lost.
His smile carved a dimple in his cheek, and she was irritated that she noticed.
And now you can use those winnings to settle your accounts, Jin said.
Arthi nodded.
All 224 duven.
Hefty,
Matteo noted, and his brief pause told her this was the moment of truth, of answer.
You know, for the longest time, I've wondered if those of us who come and drink tea can taste the blood you serve in those very same cups.
And there it was. Since learning the name of the patron who was leaving tabs unpaid, Arthi had known something was amiss. He wasn't short on money. No, he'd set his lure, and she'd come to see why, armed with a little information of her own.
Not that you drink much tea at Spindrift,
she said, holding Matteo's gaze and making her implication clear.
Come now, Arthi,
he drawled, regarding her a little more intently and a little more seriously.
I only wanted to meet you. Look at you, wooing the men,
Jin cooed at her. Then he snapped his fingers at Matteo and held out his hand.
Our money, if you please.
Jin tightened his grip on his umbrella when Matteo leaned forward, but he was only withdrawing a purse from the table at his side. The man had the money waiting. He tossed it at Jin and frowned when he slipped it in his pocket.
Aren't you going to count it?
No. And if I have to come here again, you will regret it, Arthi said. You're not as out of reach as you think.
Matteo sat back. The emerald of his eyes went flat. A forest at dark. We all have our secrets, or the world would be out of currency. Isn't that right, darling?
The lamp flickered on the table, reflecting off the glass cabinets behind him. Every aristocrat had their fair share of dark secrets, from affairs and extortion to distasteful dealings that built the ladder upon which high society had climbed so high. In that regard, Matteo Andoni almost was out of reach.
Almost. You know it more than any of us. Dropping notes in official mailboxes, whispering private affairs to prim ladies, Matteo said, stirring up chaos.
Vengeance, corrected Arthi. I have no interest in chaos.
Not directly, nor did she have any reservations about making her intentions clear.
Semantics, he replied with a shrug.
Arthi kept her seething to herself. Matteo took that as permission to continue.
And your offerings?
Vampires can easily find thralls on the streets, especially when there's nothing quite like the euphoria of being pierced by their fangs. You decided to take what's freely available and turn a profit. Thievery at its finest.
Innovation, Arthi corrected again, flint in her bones.
Before Spindrift, before her pistol, she was nothing. An orphan on the street, picking pockets and nicking blankets with a stumbling tongue and fumbling hands, eyes round as the moon and just as hungry.
Or is it a sin when it's me, and an achievement to be applauded when it's those in power?
When it's that wretched trading company leeching resources from the East? Matteo blinked.
You know, I mostly was applauding you.
You'd do well to remember,
Arthi said, ignoring him and turning to leave.
That some secrets are worth more than others.
Matteo hummed.
You know it more than anyone, Arthi, the girl who pulled pistol from stone.
Arthi didn't flinch. All of White Roaring knew about Calibor, the breech loader that no one but she had been able to pull free. It was nothing. Only a few more seconds, and she would have left. Money in her hand and brittle peace in her mind. But Matteo wasn't finished.
Arthi, the girl who came to Atenia in a boat full of blood.
She froze and turned back. Matteo was on his feet now, and that damned dimple made another appearance. But it wasn't because he was gloating. No, something unnerving sparkled in his gaze. As if he could understand what she'd been through. As if he was on her side. She couldn't let that stand. She refused. Arthi stepped closer. Close enough to rile Ivor. And she heard Jin hold the butler back with a soft tss.
I've always wondered why you never visit Spindrift after hours,
Arthi said, shifting the conversation away from herself. She wanted him to know she had been watching long enough to figure him out. We both know you have no appetite for tea.
Yes, Matteo Andoni was almost out of reach, except for one glaring secret.
Jin drew a quick breath.
You're a vampire?
Matteo said nothing. He was young, too young for his work to have spread so far and so wide without immortality on his side.
Most artists only ever see success long after they've rotted in their graves. But here you are, early 20s and a household name. Imagine what White Roaring would think, Arthi mused, if they knew their beloved painter wasn't even alive.
Terrible for business, really. You might not even have a place in society anymore.
Yet you won't tell a soul, the vampire said quietly, not at all alarmed.
And why is that?
But it was true. Arthi didn't sell her goods for cheap. Secrets were meant to ferment. They aged well. The longer they sat, the higher their value.
Because you can't resist the power of a threat.
I, on the other hand, he continued, drawing attention to his fingers, which were twisting a spindrift syringe sparkling with blood. Only need to shout about your illicit affairs, and I promise you the guard at the top of the street won't hesitate before galloping over. It's funny how quickly they can move when you least want them to. It would take more than a syringe to bring her down, but Arthie was nothing if not careful. Jin, Arthie said. Jin sighed, recognizing the tone. As you wish, little sister. In one move, he tossed his umbrella to his other hand and snatched up the revolver she'd told him, several times, to pack. Mateo's gaze widened. She liked her men a little afraid of her. I do think we can talk, he started. Jin squeezed the trigger. The sound of the gunshot blasted in the chamber. Mateo crumpled to the ground with a surprised yelp, and Arthie shook away the ringing in her ears. The vampire started quivering. Arthie frowned until he fell back, laughter rattling the glass of the cabinets behind him. Thick blood oozed from his wound, darker than crimson against his pale ivory skin. Dead skin, dead blood. I liked this shirt. The butler cried out in anguish. Oh, don't worry, old boy, Mateo said, carefully extracting the bronze bullet with two slender fingers and a grimace. The skin around the wound was bruised a deathly shade. She almost felt sorry for him, until he looked up at her and winked slowly, with vanity. Every good love story starts with a bullet to the heart. Arthie didn't like the way those words shot through her veins. She picked up the syringe. Next time, I'll make sure you stay dead. I abhor violence, Mateo called after her. She shoved out into the night, Jin at her side. She knew before she looked to the top of the street that the uniformed men would no longer be there. Not because she believed Mateo Andoni had any sway over them, but because she recognized the footsteps of her young runner pounding through the darkness, approaching 337 Arms Place. Chester emerged from the fog, breathless and panting, gripping the gate from the street side. His blonde head was bright in the moonlight. Horned guard on the way to Spindrift. There's going to be a raid. 2. Jin. Welcome to Spindrift. Here's what you need to know, Jin had said to the new recruit before they opened that morning. At 7 bells, the tea room doors lock shut. No patrons in, everyone out. No exceptions, no matter how dashing the smile. Slide the shutters over the glass and come round to the back. Now, shovel this bookcase and take down those frames. Will you look at that? Bloodhouse is nearly open for business. The new girl shivered. Jin couldn't blame her. Make your way to the booths, he continued. He had enough to do, but no one else could show her the workings better than the one who had made it all, bit by bit, idea by idea. Take that vase off. Set it on the table that unfolds from the right. Come back to the shelf. Reach for the latches on either side. And a bed will unfold. Better if you don't think about what happens in here, eh? Unless that's your thing. He winked. Step out. That gap between the store wall. Reach in, pull out the door, angle it closed. He paused to take in her all. Now, our booth is a bedroom. Do it again and again and again. Oh, and make sure you have your uniforms ready. One's for serving our prim aristocratic patrons, and the other's a little more alluring for our vampire friends who come from all walks of life. She followed him out to the floor, where the tables were set with small bowls of depleting sugar cubes and cream pots to be cleaned. The smell of tea clung to the air. Jin plucked a tray from a passing server and shoved it in the new girl's hands, sweeping the ceramics onto it. Every other table folds away, first in half, then directly into the floor like so. Slide the chairs to the wall, and while you're there, push on this lever and sit back. A settee will come out and meet you. Jin fell back, slipping through the air as the sofa unfolded and cocooned him in a plush cushion. He propped up his legs and lifted his eyebrows. That's Spindrift. Tea room by light, bloodhouse by dark. Now, hours later, it was time to do the reverse. As the clock tower struck two, Jin and Arthi burst through the back doors of Spindrift, sign as sharp as its owner, bricks as bright as her ambition. The place couldn't have been more alive. Jin paused as he always did, allowing himself to savour its warm embrace. Arthi glanced at her pocket watch. 17 minutes until the peace posse arrives. They only needed 9. 4 to clear the floor, and 5 to transform the place. They had this mastered. The lights were down low, softening the edges to a bewitching glow over the midnight crowd. The undead who came to feast, and the blood merchants who came to get paid. The crew bustled among tables, decanters glittering as they topped off teacups full of red. Vampires lounged, their conversations hushed, laughter dulcet and deep. Some relaxed with the day's papers, while others converged near the dark wainscot walls, slips of shadow against the floral damask decorating the upper half. At the far end, a vampire and a blood merchant tucked into one of the private rooms as another pair exited the room beside it. These weren't the vampires with exclusive access to the elite society of snobbery, known as the Aetherium. But they dressed and acted as if they were lords and ladies anyway, and it made Jin even more proud of Spindrift and the allure he and Arthi had created. Spindrift was more than a business. It was a safe place, and not just for their crew of orphans and castaways. In Atenia, vampires had lived for decades in relative secrecy, indistinguishable from the living, until a massacre had thrown their existence into sudden blinding light. 20 years ago, the Wolf of White Roaring brutalized the streets, ripping out throats until rivulets of red ran down the district. Though the wolf did not drink from his victims so much as he mauled them, survivors spoke of fangs and a scarlet stare. He was a vampire, though no one had known at the time, and it was strange they'd never found the one responsible. Almost as if the attack had been created for a purpose, Arthi would sometimes say. After all, fear became hate when it festered long enough. The world always teemed with darkness. Atenia had just given it a new name. A far from difficult task, for vampires were predators to begin with, and it was almost too easy. A mysterious man murdering women for hire. Blame it on vampires. A woman who up and decided to kill her cheating husband. She had to be undead. It didn't matter if the majority of vampires acted with decorum, and though the richer vampires could assimilate into high society with no one the wiser, the commonalty had no place but the shadows, and thus rare access to blood. Vampires might have to exercise restraint when feeding so as not to drain their marks, but they weren't rabid. They didn't go on killing sprees when they could quietly slip their fangs into their victims for a treat. The Wolf of White Roaring, at the time of his attack, was different. A half-vampire, torn between the living and the dead. Traditionally, a vampire was born when a person on the brink of death ingested vampire blood. Whether they were exsanguinated by an undead or died of other means, the process was the same. Drink an adequate amount of vampire blood in those precious seconds, and the deed was done. Half-vampires were different. They were fed vampire blood while they were still alive, and often against their will, giving them all the energy of the living, and then some, enough to unleash their pain upon the innocent without even realizing it. They were weaker than their counterparts, but still able to become full vampires the same way humans could. Both full and half vampires drank blood to survive. Both bore no reflection in a mirror. Full vampires cast no shadow. Half-ones did. Unlike full vampires, who are frozen at the age they were turned, half-vampires matured at a pace much slower than humans, until they eventually stopped. Regardless, here in Spindrift, vampires could be themselves for a while. Jin struck his umbrella on the floorboards, drawing the room's attention. Crimson eyes turned his way, the sign of vampires who had gorged their fill.
"Wrap it up," Arthi announced. "Spindrift closes in 10.
The din rose to a soft buzz. Vampires were a quiet lot, phased by little. With heightened hearing and increased speed, it only made sense. Several flagged down last-minute teacups of blood, many asking for Jin's signature coconut blood blend, which Spindrift had been out of for quite some time, and others departed with satisfied sighs, retracted fangs, and chaste kisses to the backs of one another's hands. Jin and Arthi got to work.
"You want to tell me what that was back there at Matteo Andoni's house?" Jin asked her, dragging the shutters down.
She spotted a dark spill and tossed some on a mop.
"You shot him."
"Because you used the tone,"
Jin said, and Arthi tipped her head at one of their more popular and scantily dressed blood merchants. Though most blood merchants filled large glass syringes and called it a day, this one offered her services in the private rooms, where a vampire could drink directly from the source. The euphoria from a vampire's fangs and whatever else transpired in a room had its perks, Jin supposed.
"What tone?" Arthi asked, picking up a decanter.
Her eyes reflected the scarlet of its contents. Jin lifted his eyebrows.
"The one that says, 'Jin, please shoot the pretty man.' Well then, you can't blame me for your lack of morals."
"Morals, the word you're looking for?"
"You know I can say all that and more in two other languages, both of which have far more letters than Atenian, so don't patronize me, Jin," she snapped.
He jerked back and paused. Arthi paused too before grabbing a rag.
"Don't look at me like that."
"Matteo really has you riled up, doesn't he?"
Jin asked, holding in a laugh. It was cute, he had to admit, Arthi being all worked up because Matteo had flaunted a dimple and taunted her with the suggestion of a love story. She snapped her pocket watch, closed with a muttered riled. Jin clapped his hands and addressed the room.
"Sorry to cut the night short, good friends, but if you would kindly leave the premises, I would be much obliged."
Chairs were pushed back, coins clinked. The last of the vampires stepped through the back doors with nods, waves, and hat tips. Everyone had a heartbeat, a flush to their skin. Well-fed vampires were as close to living as they could get. It took 3 minutes and 49 seconds for the floor to clear, and then the true chaos erupted.
"Rennie!" Arthi yelled. "Tea!"
Rennie brewed good tea, always the right steep, the perfect shade. It was the only reason Arthi let him wander the floor during morning hours, considering he preferred blood himself. An odd fellow. Fresh kettles thudded onto stovetops. Ready ones whistled. And before long, steady hands were pouring steaming tea into bowls to mask the stench of blood. It was a rhythm in Jin's veins.
"Pick up the pace!"
Arthi shouted, sliding the bookcase in place and sealing the back door.
"Leave that. Unlock the front. Chester, the glasses. You three get in uniform, and the rest of you out of sight."
Spindrift being a bloodhouse was no secret. White Roaring knew it. The crew knew it. Every member of the Horned Guard knew it. The difference was in the proof. None existed. Except for that syringe Matteo had, of course. Jin still didn't know how he'd managed to pilfer it. Only the crew was allowed to handle the supplies used for bloodletting, and they were instructed to do so with care and precaution.
"Felix, fetch the mirrors,"
Arthi ordered as Jin passed her the tubes full of blood and sterilized bundles of surgical instruments to tuck underneath the floorboards in the front. Every few weeks, the Horned Guard would try something new. Elaborate raids, claiming incorrect paperwork to store shipments of tea and coconuts, all but defaming Spindrift in the newspapers.
Maybe we ought to hide your pistol, Jin suggested, wiping down the counter.
Sure, everyone knew about it, but there was a difference between knowing about it and having it shoved in your face. He glanced at its grip, etched in black filigree, that gave it an ethereal look, once smeared with the fingerprints of those who had tried to pull it free, using chisels and axes and everything in between. Really, all they'd needed were the small hands of a small girl from a small island, far, far away. A girl who had been wronged, cheated, stolen. Arthi tucked away the knight's invoices and looked at him like he'd dropped his wits on the run here.
They're regular old guards, Jin. Since when are we afraid of them?
But Mateo's words had struck a little too close. Something about this night had riled him too, and it wasn't the artist's dimple.
They send a higher-ranked guard with every new raid, he said.
Arthi did that thing with her face, a dismissal that pulled back one side of her mouth.
Don't start doubting your handiwork now.
Everyone took the slip, slide, and click transformation of Spindrift for granted. Not Arthi. She never forgot the weeks it took to make it work, and the strain it had put on Jin. Arthi didn't forget anything. When Jin was 7, he'd wished for a sister. When he was 11, Arthi had pulled him out of death's embrace. Jin still remembered squinting up at her ratty and dirty figure, the kind of person his father, dressed in the finest wool and the shiniest shoes, would point out to him from the carriage window and say,
"See, these are the people you will help one day, little heron."
His father hadn't been there to witness the roles reversed. She was, simply put, a tempest in a bottle, tiny and simmering and ready to obliterate. White roaring had whittled her sharp as a blade, and her wits just the same. How far she'd come from the girl in rags to a master in a tailored suit, baker boy hat pulled over the swoops of her mauve hair, a pinstripe waistcoat snug over her crisp shirt, cuffs neat, collar popped, suit jacket always open, because I'm no straight lace. The jacket matched the belt slung low and angled on her hips, pistol on full display.
Any news on the coconut?
Arthi asked when Jin grabbed a coir brush for a stubborn patch of blood. Coconut husks really did make the best brushes. Spindrift's imports consisted of tea and coconuts from Arthi's homeland of Ceylon, but with a blight affecting crops across the island, they hadn't replenished their coconut stores in months. Jin shook his head. He could have sworn the light in her eyes dimmed a little as she rearranged their various tins of loose-leaf tea, from plain and robust black teas to delicate white teas and curated blends infused with fruit and other flavours, though Arthi refused to brew any atrocity at Spindrift that wasn't truly tea, like chamomile or peppermint.
At least our tea's safe, eh?
He said. Without it, they'd have no tea room. Coconut, on the other hand, they only used to enhance the experience of the bloodhouse.
And still no word from our palace snitchers. Pol heard today that they might be on lockdown.
They had a network of maids and stewards and household staff willing to trade whispers for coin, but hadn't heard from anyone in the palace in nearly 2 weeks.
The palace might be on lockdown? Arthi asked, lifting her brows in surprise.
Jin nodded. He didn't know if that meant the ram was worried about someone getting in or out.
They're almost here!
The lookout shouted over the ruckus of sliding tables and clinking teacups. Jin tensed.
Dolce periculum, brother,
Arthi reminded him, holding up her left arm. He knocked the back of his right hand against the back of hers. Their knuckles rapped.
We were made for trouble, you and me.
Figures silhouetted through the frosted glass of Spindrift's doors as the last settee folded into the wall and the rest of the crew disappeared. Jin yanked up the flip-top table and stepped behind it. Arthi was in front of him. The doors flew open without a knock, and five uniformed guards stepped inside. The outline of a head with wicked horns was emblazoned on their breasts in silver thread. The badge of the ram, Etenia's latest masked monarch. A server scampered forward.
Hello, sirs. Can I interest you in a cup of White Roaring's best tea? Royal Etenian's my favourite.
The guards looked perplexed. No self-respecting tea room would be open this late, but Arthi liked to swamp them, get the men a little dazed and distracted, taunt them with what they already knew, especially when the alternative was awkward silence.
Try the Ceylani Supreme. Best tea in the country, really, another crew member called, looking up from the sink. Never mind the capital.
Always go with the Crimson Gem myself, said a third, leaning close. Nothing beats a good spiced Pekoe.
If Arthi was a tea, that was what she would be. It was brewed with care and steeped with just the right amount of spices that brought out earthy, smoky undertones as the leaves unfolded. It demanded perfection, conferred the best, and punished anything that wasn't with downright bitterness.
Gentlemen.
She inclined her head on cue. Jin could only see the back of Arthi's mauve head, but he knew her smile was the edge of a razor.
Noise complaint. I understand the clinking of teacups can be a little aggressive at 2 in the morning.
Always a lot to clean and prepare for our morning guests. The one in charge of the lot puffed out his chest and stomped closer. His livery was a light grey and stood in contrast to the solid black of the others. If only he knew that every last bit of proof the clods needed was underneath the floorboards at his feet.
You think you're a king, Casimir, defying the law?
Did you hear that, Jin? I'm King Arthi now.
She turned back to the guards.
Laws enacted by men like you, scrawling words they believe they might understand. Laws vilifying anyone who isn't as peaky as you.
She leaned back, slinging a hand across the bar top. He really did look peaky in the light. Pale and an almost sickly white.
No, Sergeant. Can't defy a law that doesn't include me.
She was right. Etenian laws were created for the white man, usually at the expense of anyone who didn't share their pallor. This was how someone like Matteo Andoni could live a markedly different life than someone like Arthi. The sergeant's gaze lit up eagerly.
Touchy subject, is it?
Having trouble keeping up with rent, I heard.
That's the problem when folk like you come to a place where we have rules.
I hear it's only a matter of time before they evict you and your lot. Jin's brow furrowed. They made every payment for the building. On time.
Time to get your ears cleaned, then, Arthi said, betraying nothing.
Then why do you look like you want to kill me? The sergeant asked with a smirk.
Ow, that's just my face, Arthi replied. One gets a taste for blood when you have to lick your own wounds, you see.
The sergeant stared for a minute, very likely trying to find something to say, before he jerked his head at the others.
Start looking.
Jin flinched as a table and chair struck the far wall, followed by several stools. The men treated the tea room like a pen to play in, tearing up the floors near the private rooms that were now secluded booths. One of them ducking his head and coming up empty.
I didn't say ruin the place, the sergeant said tiredly. If you're going to pull up the floors, find wherever it's hollow.
How considerate, Jin commented, and lowered his voice to ask Arthi.
What's he on about us being behind on payments?
Arthi said nothing. Something shattered. Jin sighed and lifted his chin to the men ransacking the place.
Need some help over there?
With a sneer, one of them crouched by the front doors and rapped his knuckles on the wood. Even here behind the counter, Jin could hear that damning echo. The sergeant looked to Arthi. Arthi looked back.
Have at it. I won't stop you.
Jin wanted to stop him. He wanted his life unscathed. He wanted Spindrift unscathed. And they were the same thing. The sergeant wedged his knife beneath the worn floorboards. "Below switch two," Arfi murmured to Jin. Matteo Andoni had clearly shaken her if she thought that would tip anything in their favor. Blowing a bulb was the oldest trick in the book. The silliest, the most amateur. "Jin," she bit out. One of these days she was going to get him killed, and he'd be too dead to whine about it. He pressed down on the faulty power switch he had long ago put together under the counter, cursing a stray spark. Above them, one of the many suspended bulbs popped and hissed. The men looked up as the light bloomed brighter and made an alarming buzzing noise before it shattered, raining glass down on them. The length of wire swayed, bereft, and the sergeant shook the shards off and returned to work. Some bloody good that did. The light had dimmed the space. Nothing else. "Patience, Jin," Arthi said when he glanced at her with exasperation. To the men, she said casually, "Apologies. You know how it is on this side of White Roaring. Power can be quite fickle around here." This was the side of White Roaring that society had discarded, where the sound of a gunshot was as commonplace as a horse's whinny. Spindrift sat on the edge of it, half outcast, half gentry, rising from the rubble of its surroundings through sheer force of will. With every new secret a patron let slip, Arthi tucked some official or another into her arsenal, turning the slums into a kingdom of their own with Spindrift as their crown. And the ram, as the increasing number of raids made clear, was painfully aware of it. Yet, with the guards seconds away from enough proof to hang them all, Arthi had never looked more at ease. The sergeant yanked the floorboard out of place. There was a long pause and a murmur before he and the others rose, and Jin saw that the hollow beneath the floorboard was hollow. Not a syringe or blood vial in sight. Though he had watched Arthi putting both down that very hole mere moments ago. "Seems you lost a good night's sleep over nothing," Jin goaded, setting his chin in his hands.
"Told you,"
one of the horn guards said, yawning loudly. The sergeant shot him a dirty look and fixed the same on Arthi. "You think you're..." Arthi cut him short by swinging open the door. "Whatever you're about to say, sergeant, I don't think it. I know it." Power was indeed fickle, and in the ever-changing landscape of White Roaring, the Casimirs were untouchable. 3. Arthi. Spilled tea and chipped cups were better than a prison cell, and the mood was celebratory as the crew began clean-up. Arthi locked the doors, watching the smudge of the horned guard's retreating carriage through the frosted glass.
"Do you want to tell us what happened to our stuff?"
Jin asked, dark green coat slung over his arm. Someone handed him a cup of tea, and he breathed in the bold aroma infused with the sweet, sharp tang of bergamot and soft lavender. Lady Slate was his favourite. It suited him, as elegant and put together as he was.
"Yeah, boss, where'd everything go?"
Chester echoed, and the others paused their work to listen. He'd been with Arthi and Jin ever since he was toddling about, and Spindrift was all he knew.
"Still here."
Arthi picked up the floorboard and popped out Felix's mirrors from either side of the hollowed-out space. Behind them, tucked farther inside, was the Bloodhouse stash. Arthi showed them the panels. "Remember?"
"You didn't tell me," Jin said with a frown, setting the cup on the saucer in his other hand.
She resisted the urge to roll her eyes when he took another dainty sip with his pinky raised.
"Then why bust the bulb?"
Rennie asked, morose and quiet as ever. Arthi passed him the panels.
"Because any guard worth his salt knows a mirror when he sees one. But when the light buzzed, they looked up, blinding them just enough to obscure the mirrors."
Baffled nods went around.
Those cabbage hats got close,
Chester exclaimed. It was getting worse. No one said it, but everyone in the crew knew it. Though Etenia had grown from a kingdom to an empire, its ruling body remained the same. No one knew how the council decided to appoint the masked monarchs, and no one knew the faces behind each mask. Before the ram was the eagle, before him the fox, always with unchecked, untrammeled, unbridled power. The ram was different, allying with the people over their fear of vampires, amending and reinforcing vampire-human laws, speaking aloud what every Atenian was worried about. It was as simple as acknowledging the existence of vampires when the prior monarchs were content not to. Atenians had never been happier to allow someone they didn't know to wear a crown and command a country that was slowly leashing the world. But Arthi wouldn't allow the ram to control Spindrift the way Etenia controlled its colonies. No one's going to take Spindrift from us. She met Jin's eyes, knowing the reason for his concern. And no, Jin, not even our proprietor. That was a hiccup she would settle tonight. Spindrift was but one part of her retribution for what this country had done to her. She'd spun a business out of tea leaves because the Atenians had found her tiny island off Ceylon and cultivated it to their liking. What lives the Atenian soldiers in red uniforms hadn't stolen were claimed either by disease or deforestation that spawned landslides and floods in a country unprepared for such wrath, simply because they wanted to make room for crops like rubber and tea. They took Ceylon and called it a colony, as if it was an honourable title, when they'd really made chattels out of both people and land, praising themselves for their villainy before doing it again and again and again. If the Peakies wanted to harvest the blood of her people for profit, she would make them pay for it in their own country, pocketing their secrets and wreaking as much havoc as they had in whatever form she could. She supposed Spindrift wasn't simply part of her retribution, but the core of it, though Calibor came close. For as long as Etenia could remember, a pistol had been lodged immovably in a plinth at the centre of the busy, white-roaring square. Time and age adhering legends and rumours to its ever-shining surface. They were fairy tales, really, carried on desperate tongues, born out of despair. The one who draws Calibor free is our saviour. The one who wields Calibor is Etenia's right and true leader. Arthi was neither of those things, only a girl who paid attention. It was hard to believe in fairy tales when she'd lived a nightmare, and it just so happened that legends were good for business. The pistol had created a new market in Etenia's economy, with merchants selling everything from luck charms to ointments, promising a good grip. But it wasn't until Arthi tracked one such merchant through a shadowy alley to an official's grand manor that she realized the monarchy was involved. A flocking crowd meant money spent and taxes paid. And in this scheme, Etenia was the ultimate puppeteer. With Jin in tow, Arthi had watched and waited until White Roaring Square was cordoned off by the Horned Guard, and the pistol effortlessly pulled from a disguised contraption by a pair of men for what was clearly maintenance. Calibor was a hoax. The pistol had been artificially fixed in place to exploit hopeful Atenians. Still, the pistol was special. Silver and strange, with a single bullet in a pristine chamber. Otherworldly, yes, but there was no legend holding it in place. If Arthi hadn't seen firsthand what Etenia had done to her people, she might have felt as betrayed as Jin had upon the revelation. Instead, she'd felt a glee so poignant, so acute, that even today, nearly a decade later, she remembered it. Arthi wasn't like Jin, whose parents had done the immigrating for him, softening the thorns beneath his shoes and blunting the daggers that came with being different. She had come to Atenia on a boat more than a decade ago, alone and hungry, unable to communicate in any of the languages she knew. All she could do was observe. It had taken weeks to learn the ropes of a swindle, to play the game that every man with polished shoes and mutton chops called good business. She was still a child, but when you saw the cruelty of the world firsthand, you became a little cruel yourself. A great number of people had to be involved to uphold a false legend as complex as Calibor, and Arthi found enough loose lips and clandestine pasts to barter for what she needed. Information on the years-old scheme. Jin took care of the rest, telling her why a particular angle was better in the morning than the afternoon, shoving a coconut with a straw into her hands while he perfected their timeline. After days of plotting, White Roaring Square became her first mark, and she would never forget the way the people looked at her in the afternoon light. The girl who pulled a pistol from plaster. She was dusty and dirty, but she didn't care. She'd found purpose that day. The horned guards stationed around Calibor looked as if they wanted to apprehend her, but there was no law stipulating that it had to be returned when it was finally pulled free. The pistol was hers. It wasn't waiting for a divine grip. It hadn't been left there by a long-forgotten enchanter for a future king. It was simply one of the many artifacts in Atenia's possession. They collected trophies for civilizing countries that had never asked for a redefinition of the word. Arthi, like her dead family, dead neighbors, and ravaged country, could tell you a tale or two about that. It started with trade, but every Atenian was born with a mind-boggling, delusional sense of supremacy. And for them, the word trade translated to take. Atenia conquered, and the EJC came in after, snatching up whatever it liked. Without the hoax of Calibor, Arthi would never have found her true calling. Vengeance. Without it, she would have remained trapped in her own skin, unable to escape her pain, to unleash her anger. Every day since, the Horned Guard waited for her to slip, to shoot the wrong man or steal the right document. Anything to take her in and lock her up. But she didn't abide by the law so much as she bent it. She didn't carry a weapon so much as her defiance. And weren't they one and the same? Jin picked up his umbrella and handed Arthi her coat. "Time to pay our proprietor a visit?" she asked. He nodded. "We ought to ask him a few questions." Arthi pulled up her collar as the door swung shut behind them, muting the racket inside Spindrift. Jin tugged on his favourite open-back gloves and sighed wistfully when they passed the abandoned warehouse at the end of the road, where their forger used to take up residence, a two-storey structure teetering toward the sea like a weed in search of sunlight. Under the gaslights across the street, tarts waited for a sale, smoke curling from their cigars, hoopless skirts as starved as most on this side of White Roaring. Boys with caps pulled low meandered in the late crowds, swindling Duvin. Arthi spotted four Bloodhouse regulars blending in. Spindrift stopped them from hunting on the streets and risking their victims dying, or even worse, waking up from the haze that came with a bite and lodging a complaint with the Horned Guard for drinking without consent. At Spindrift, vampires paid humans for their services. Transactions, Arthi had learned, always made things easier. No one did anything for nothing, and neither would she. Whether it was dangling a secret affair to ensure an unlicensed shipment got through, or reminding an official about his bastard child so she was given a warning before a raid, Arthi's pockets were full of coin, of secrets, of people. And it aggrieved anyone on the shinier side of White Roaring. "How's the new girl?" she asked, a banner announcing the opening of yet another new store ruffled in the breeze.
"Catching on," Jin replied. "I think she'll be good."
"Pretty doesn't mean good. Stay alert. You know, you should get out and see someone, Jin said eventually. A decade ago, he wouldn't have spoken this way. Being a high-society brat, he had been scandalized to walk about unchaperoned with 9-year-old Arthi, simply because she was a girl. But the world spun differently on this side of White Roaring. Have a dally. Arthi gave him a look. She wasn't like him. She didn't go around breaking hearts. She broke other things, like laws and contracts and bones. As the Peakies like to say, you are pretty for a foreigner, Mateo seemed to like. Her face warmed. Not another word. Jin laughed, and when she didn't comment, he softened. He's up, Arthi. Whatever the ram throws at us, we'll dodge it. We don't do the worrying. We create it. And if the proprietor's been compromised? She got this far because she played a different game. But what happened when others decided to play it too? When the ram got tired of sending sergeant after sergeant? The proprietor's had our back for 5 years, Jin reminded her. Clouds wrapped the moon in gauze, and smoke snaked out of a nearby window, brawling with the salt breeze beyond. Arthi knew what it took to win in this country, the probabilities and the costs. Every last tally rounding out in her head like the books she kept in her office. Jin led her between two rickety flats over to the next street, so they wouldn't have to squeeze past the fires the tarts lit in empty barrels to keep warm. He glanced at her. No one else could read her so well, and she felt lighter when he pretended to squint into the shadows, only to turn and dangle a pocket watch on a chain in front of her. Arthi patted at her vest. Her pocket watch.
Did you?
Jin laughed and threw it at her. Come on, you snail, he said, already loping ahead. Race you to the docks.